2 years ago, Barack Obama became the first president ever to have his official U.S. presidential portrait taken with a digital camera. In this past year alone, Nikon, Kodak, and others have stopped making film cameras, indicating that digital seems to have won the photography wars. So, how do digital cameras work, and are they really superior to film cameras? On today's Please Explain, we're exploring the history and technology behind digital photography, and joining me are David Pogue, technology columnist at the New York Times, and Katrin Eisman, the director of the Masters in Digital Photography program at the School of Visual Arts. Welcome to our show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
David, first things first, just how does a digital camera take a picture?
Well, it works exactly the same as a film camera. Some of your listeners may remember those, except that instead of a piece of plastic film, the image is recorded by a chip that measures light. That's basically the difference.
But the plastic film has silver nitrate on it, doesn't it? And this doesn't have anything like that.
It does actually have something like that. It has thousands and thousands, or millions actually, of tiny, tiny sensors, microscopic sensors called pixels. That's why cameras are sometimes measured in how many megapixels, how many millions of these little light sensors they have. And in the same way that the chemicals used to record the presence of light, now a little electronic circuit does it.
I want to get to those megapixels later, but when was the first digital camera invented? Do we know?
Oh, it goes well back into the early 70s.
Wow, long ago.
At the Bell
Labs. That seems pretty recent.
Well, I'm sure it's earlier. I imagine my professor's ready to change my grade.
But it was Bell Labs?
Bell Labs and then Xerox. And, of course, Kodak was always a leader in digital and electronic cameras.
Even though Kodak knew that it was going to put its film business out of business?
I was at that table when they were having those arguments.
Because I remember reading that Kodak made its early cameras available for practically nothing. In fact, even gave them away because they thought they were in the film business.
Well, those first cameras were about $25,000 and weighed 12 pounds. So it wasn't exactly something you'd be, you know, like taking to a birthday party.
But what about the digital cameras? Didn't it take something like 23 seconds just to capture an image?
Those days are long gone.
Although, I don't know, some of the shutter lag on some of the cheap cameras I've seen are pretty close.
Well, and why were they first invented? Obviously, I'm assuming that this was something for the U.S. government, not for the consumer.
Yeah, the first consumer camera didn't come out until, I think, 1996. And I think it was Apple.
Apple Quick Take 100.
Quick Take, right, exactly. Now in museums and gadget drawers everywhere.
So Apple is often the first, and then other people come along and...
Well, the first pictures – I'm sorry to interrupt, but the
– No, that's okay.
You really saw the impact of the first way of digital photography in China at Tiananmen Square. Mm-hmm. Those night shots that were sort of murky where you saw what was going on. I mean, that was actually a Sony Mavica, which was an analog camera, but it proved how important digital was going to be for the news.
But weren't the first digital photographs used to take photos of space?
Let's ask the professor. I don't know.
Well, you did mention the military.
Yeah.
And it was actually the military and the U.S. Navy. The U.S. Navy had the mandate so that their ships would be effluent free to get the silver out of the process because silver is very bad for the environment. So our tax dollars at work, the military and NASA, put these cameras in our pockets.
David, don't some of the older photographers say they still prefer film? What qualities does it have that digital doesn't, and what can digital do that old plastic film can't?
Yeah, that's a huge and important question. Photographers, as a rule, are a cantankerous and opinionated lot because it's sort of a black art. So whenever I write something about photography for the Times, the comment boards are filled with, you know, very cranky, obstreperous photographers.
The same people who like vinyl records.
Exactly. But even more so. So, I mean, at this point, I'll go out there and just say it. Scientifically, there's nothing left that a film camera offers over a digital camera in terms of photographic quality. I don't think any knowledgeable scientific person would argue that film can still do things that digital can't. In terms of resolution, in terms of light sensing. And in fact, digital offers many advantages. There is no film grain, for example. You can add it in software, but there is no film grain. The pictures are perfect.
And that grain, some photographers argue, gives you a sense of air.
Yeah. Plenty of people, just like they say that, you know, doing a green magic marker line around the outside of a CD makes it sound warmer. I mean, it's just there's a certain...
It's not true.
It's a matter of opinion. But the huge advantage of digital, of course, is what you can do with the picture. You can duplicate it endlessly, send it around, store it, recall it a million different ways.
My guests are David Pogue of The New York Times and Katrin Eisman of the School of Visual Arts. We're talking about digital photography on today's Please Explain. And we invite your calls at 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC. We also have a blog post on our blog below down, which discusses photographic manipulation, and we invite your participation there as well. I'm Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. So let's talk a bit about how digital photographs are stored, especially since they don't have negatives. Can you walk us through what happens after you take a picture?
Well, once you've taken the picture, you've got the image on the camera card. So you've got one version. And that's where a lot of photographers get very nervous, because you want to get that image off the card onto a reliable media, usually a hard drive. A lot of photographers, professional photographers, they feel it's very important to have redundancy because they never trust their computers, which is a good thing not to do. So they'll immediately make a copy to a separate hard drive or upload it to an online server. And that beauty, as David mentioned, was the ability to make copies of the files. They're exact duplicates. If you make a copy of a film picture or a copy of a print, it's always going to degrade in quality.
And the main files that people use are JPEG, MPEG, TIFF, is it called, T-I-F-F?
Yeah.
No, I mean, are any better than any others?
Realistically, there are only two formats in modern cameras. And what's really cool is that a digital camera records reams and reams of data about the light coming in. And then if you have a little camera, a pocket camera, it then studies that, analyzes it, make decisions about how the color and light should be, and freezes it into a compact little file. That's the JPEG file that most consumers use. But professional photographers would prefer to have the original record of reams and reams of data, and then later in Photoshop on the computer, they will make decisions about how to process that and boil it down to a frozen image. That's called a raw file. They take up much more space on the hard drive. It needs much more babysitting on the computer later. But those are the two, raw and JPEG.
But in an odd way, because of Photoshop, you can manipulate what would have been the negative. In the older version, you had a negative, and then you went to an enlarger or some other processing process, and then you manipulated there. When I was in photography class, I dodged in, and I dodged out and burned in and did all those things. Each time I made another print.
Right.
But you can do it on the original version and then duplicate that from then on?
Well, we never want to work on the original. So professional photographers only shoot raw to have the full dynamic range, the full color, the full bit depth. Because then on the computer, using either Adobe Lightroom or Adobe Photoshop, they can enhance the file to suit different purposes. And I've gone back to files that I've shot 2, 10, 20 years ago and reinterpreted them. And that's something that's really a joy to do with digital.
A good deal of what makes digital photography unique seems to be the transmittal process, that it's just so much easier to share images. You agree?
Absolutely. And in the new age where everybody's taking pictures with their cell phones, and of course, that's part of it. You want to take a picture so that you can immediately transmit it.
And it seems to have changed the world. We get all of these images now from what's going on in the Middle East, in Japan, just from people's cell phones.
Absolutely true. And there's consumers out there should know there's a memory card called the iFi card that's just a regular memory card, except that it also has Wi-Fi, meaning that when you're in an internet hotspot, as soon as you take a picture, it's automatically transmitted back home to your computer on your desk and simultaneously to the web to Flickr or Shutterfly or one of 25 things. It in fact gives your camera a bottomless memory card, and it removes the worry that you're going to have only one precious copy.
Now, there's been a lot of concern about manipulation, and over the years we've seen some people who faked pictures, journalists, unfortunately. Has that led to people not necessarily trusting what they're seeing these days?
It's, in a way, it's a turn the light on in the darkroom of what people have done in the past. And it's we're walking a fine line here, because people want to trust photographs. People still believe that event happened. And so when we manipulate, change, replace, enhance, we're breaking that trust with the viewer. So it's very important to make people aware that this is taking place. We see it, of course, a lot in advertising. And, you know, if it's creative,
but in the old days they would airbrush. Is that all that different?
Yeah, but the ability in Photoshop to perfect is it can be heinous if you put it in the wrong hands.
But I would argue you're exactly right. There is no difference between now and the old days. In the old days, Ansel Adams would slave over contrast and lighting and produce something that he didn't see with his eye. And same thing with photojournalists. People have always manipulated pictures, whether it's digital or film.
So right now there are all these acronyms that we have to deal with, ISO white balance. There are those inexplicable icons, the tulips and mountains. That's what bothers me about having a digital camera. After a while, I rely on one or two things and hope for the best.
But it's no different from a film camera. I mean, film cameras had the same range of point and shoot, where it's idiot proof and there's no decisions for you to make, and then there are the professional ones. So really nothing's changed there.
Well, early digital cameras had fewer megapixels, and the number keeps on getting higher and higher. At a certain point, does it really matter whether you have 8, 10, 20?
It's a complete distraction.
It's a myth. It's propagated by the camera companies, and I, for one, am not going to stand on it. I did a column a couple years ago where I took the same photo at 5, 8, and 13 megapixels, put them up in Times Square on huge enlargements, 16 by 24, and asked 100 people to see if they could tell which was 5, 8, and 13. And out of the 100, do you know how many got them correct? Well, most people said no. Even if by mashing their faces up against it, they couldn't see any difference. Out of the ones who hazarded a guess, only one got it right. And she was a photography professor, and I think she just got lucky. So it is a total myth. Over 5 megapixels, which is an ancient camera, you are golden to make giant prints. They make billboards from 6 megapixel prints. I mean, it's a total myth.
So this is really a matter of just the camera companies being able to jack up the price every time they add to the megapixels?
Right. It was a marketing ploy. And by the way, it isn't still going on. Their bluff has been called. We've settled in at 12 for pocket cameras and 18 for the professionals. And now they're focusing on things that really matter, like light sensitivity. And that's fantastic.
What about the kinds of cameras you can get? There's point and shoot. There's SLRs. And now there's something I've just heard about called the 4/3 micro. I mean, I know what a point and shoot is. I know what an SLR is. It's just a version of the old 35 millimeter SLR.
Well,
although one of the things that makes it a lot better is you get to see a bigger image. In the old SLRs, you had to look into a little window, and now you get a pretty good sense of what your image is going to be like on a fairly large screen.
Right. So professionals only use SLRs, those big, black, heavy, touristy things. They take much better pictures because they have much bigger, quote, film. They have much bigger sensors inside.
And they can change the lenses.
That's right. And they can change the lenses. The 90% of us who buy cameras buy the little compacts that are point and shoots and much easier to use. What the world has always wanted is a little camera, like a compact, that takes glorious big pictures like an SLR. So Panasonic and Olympus said, surely there's a way to do that. And they came up with this thing called Micro 4/3 by eliminating the mirror and the prism inside the camera and instead beaming basically a little TV screen up to your eye. They were able to shrink the SLR while keeping the sensor giant. So basically we have this third category.
Is that the future? For most of us?
It's an option. In technology, nothing ever replaces anything. They just add on.
Well, what about the camera phones? Do they work pretty much the same way?
I'm carrying my iPhone now for its photo capabilities and rarely carry a point and shoot anymore.
But they don't take – well, I don't know about iPhones.
It's surprising. That 5-megapixel sensor, what am I trying to do with iPhone picture? I'm loading them up to hit Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I'm not doing some people have done fashion photography, but I'm not doing professional. Because with photography, it's like being a cook. You choose the right tool for your project. And if I, if I'm going to be cooking for the White House or taking pictures of the White House, I'm going to show up with professional equipment. If I'm walking down the street, I'm happy to carry a good 5-megapixel camera, which is in that iPhone.
Because you never know when something is going to grab your attention and you want to take a picture of it.
And you should always have a camera with you because it makes it a lot easier to take pictures.
My problem when I was serious about photography is I always took the picture 2 seconds after I should have, whereas Cartier-Bresson or any of the other great ones would have taken it just at the right second.
Take a lot of pictures. Shoot, shoot, shoot. It always helps.
Casio has a really cool camera that lets you take a picture after the event has happened. Basically, it's continuously going all the time, and only when you take your finger off the button does it record the last few. So it's great for the baseball swing or the sudden eruption of the geyser.
We have to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll be taking listener calls. Our number here is 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page, which I will try to read out loud. I can never get to all of them, and I always feel a little guilty, but we only have so much time. My guests are David Pogue, technology columnist at the New York Times, and Catherine Eisman, the director of the Masters in Digital Photography program at the School of Visual Arts. Again, 646-829-3985. We are back with Catherine Eisman, the director of the Masters in Digital Photography program at the School of Visual Arts and author of Digital Photography. You're the co-author with Sean Duggan and Tim Gray, and the book is published by Real World. Also here is David Pogue, technology columnist at the New York Times. And we're talking about digital photography on today's Please Explain. And taking your calls, and a lot of calls have been coming in. Let's go right to John from Paramus, New Jersey. Hi, John.
How you doing, Leonard? I still use film, too. I just wanted to know, and the digital cameras, do they have large format digital cameras available, or do people use large format cameras, or do they just blow the pictures up?
What do you want, 8x10?
Yeah,
4x6?
Yeah, like 4x5s, yeah, those type of things, cameras.
Yeah, absolutely they do. I think, doesn't Hasselblad still make...
Yeah, there's digital backs, phase one, that you can add and use on a 4x5 or on a Hasselblad. Now, your sensor will never be as big as a 4x5 or an 8x10 inch sheet of film because we could never afford that. But you can take advantage of your older cameras, 4x5, the shifts, the tilts, and those good lenses with a digital back.
Okay, thank you for your call. And we go now to Charles from Manhattan. Hi, Charles. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was just going to comment on one of the advantages of digital photography. The digital sensor is actually pretty agnostic to light wavelengths, and I've been using IR film for years. And I recently just had a digital camera modified for infrared photography, and it's completely changed the way I've done infrared photography because now I can actually see infrared images in real time, at the time I take them, and I actually can focus at the same time. Whereas before, I had to use nearly opaque filters and had to guess my focus before I took the picture. It's kind of interesting. It's actually quite revolutionary.
Thank you for calling us. You're both nodding your heads. Is there anything you want to add to that?
He's absolutely right. Every sensor is actually IR sensitive, but there's a filter put on top of it by the manufacturer so it doesn't see IR. And the beauty of IR is you get that beautiful glowing and the chlorophyll, and someone's been running, they turn into this red demon. So if you have an older point-and-shoot or even older DSLR, there's services that you can have that filter taken off for about $300 and really, in a way, invigorate your photography again. I agree completely. It's so much fun.
And, of course, his larger point, that you look at the picture before you take it, is something that just film can't touch or correct an error because you see the picture you've just taken.
Even Polaroid didn't allow you to see the picture first. I would think Polaroid was hurt before even film photography was hurt.
Probably, but this is again an early predecessor of the current cell phone conversation we were having. Yeah, the cell phone doesn't take as good pictures as a real camera, but it's the 80%, 20% rule. You know, it's better to have something that can take a picture than to have nothing that takes fantastic pictures.
A number of people have been writing in, and one person says, my new digital camera uses a different kind of memory chip than my first one. Why can't they use the same chips like film cameras do?
They pretty much have. There were four or five different card formats a few years ago. Today, they're all settling on one, the SD card. Some of the big pro cameras still use one the size of a Triscuit, the compact flash card. But everybody else, Sony gave up on their proprietary card. Olympus gave up on theirs. So really, they have standardized.
Another person asked, what about the big price difference between SLRs and point-shoot cameras? Is that because the electronic components are that much more advanced or complicated?
It's not just the electronics. It's the lenses. It's the body. It's the software. It's all of it. I mean, the glass on a professional camera is so much better, lets in so much more light than what you get on a $200 cheapie.
And also, professional cameras are built to withstand dirt, dust, war, you know, the horrible situations that they're put into that your point-and-shoot just doesn't need to. So there's a reason for that price difference.
We go now to Carl from Manhattan. Hi, Carl. You're on the air.
Hi, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask a question. After putting up and manipulating a photograph on Photoshop, and I like the colors very much, they're perfect, but when I press the print button, the resultant picture that comes out does not match exactly the colors that I wanted. They're somehow off key. How can I compensate for that?
Well, that's a big issue that many professionals are also grappling with. And just to put it simply, what you see on your monitor is light, and what you're looking at in a print is ink on paper. And so you're already fighting with physics. So the first step you really need to do is you need to calibrate your monitor. And there's, you know, $80, $90 devices made by Pantone, made by X-Rite that can help you do that, because you really want to be able to trust your monitor. And the second thing is all photographers who are making prints have to, in a way, be reasonable, because the light that is emitted is so gorgeous, luscious, saturated, that ink on paper can never replicate that. But that is a big, big topic. You're welcome to email me, and I'm happy to help you out.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
And we go now to James from Manhattan. Hi, James.
Hi there. My question is the archival nature of the prints. I think that's an issue that a film kind of still has the upper hand with. That you can make a photo gravure that lasts 1,000 years. You can make a gelatin silver print that can last 350 years, 500 years. But do they really have a printing process for digital that can hold up to that?
If you're using the latest inkjet prints by Epson with their latest K3 inks and their media, they've been proven to last upwards of 200 years. If you're interested in that topic, you really want to listen to a man named Henry Wilhelm. His website is wilhelmresearch.com, where he's been really putting all of these medias through the paces. And you've brought up an incredibly important issue that when you make a print, you want your memories to last. You don't want them to fade. So it's important to pay attention to these things.
I'm sorry. I'm just concerned that, you know, with the digital technology that, you know, eventually things become irretrievable.
Yeah, this is a huge, huge issue. It's called data rot, because the truth is we don't print very many pictures anymore. I mean, we're talking about fewer than 2% of our digital pictures are ever printed. So the really big worry is how do we preserve those JPEG and RAW files for 100 years? And that is a totally open question. There is no format. I mean, what's the longest you've ever owned a hard drive? You know, 5 years, not 200. So really, it's the dawn of a new era where we have to diligently, every 10 years, transfer everything we've got to the latest technology and get our ancestors to do it too, or it will all be lost. Descendants, sorry.
There is a student at SVA, John from Brooklyn, so I'm going to address this to you, Catherine. He asks on our show page, could you talk about the cost difference between large format digital versus film? For instance, to make a 40 by 60 print, it is much cheaper to shoot film and to scan it rather than to shell out the cost for an expensive digital capture system.
Well, it always depends where you step into that workflow. All right. So if John wants to use the what's called the hybrid approach, shoot film, scan it, clean it up, and then make a print, that's a very viable way of working. So he's taking advantage of the economy of the film, putting the time into the cleanup. And then I would recommend going out to inkjet. I was at a conference last week with Richard Benson, who is a MacArthur fellow, who also says that inkjet prints are going to be better than C prints because of the media choice. So shoot film, scan it, and then go out to the digital prints.
Part of the problem right now is that ink is so expensive. I think it was pointed out that we pay a couple of $1,000 a quart for ink, and that's how the camera companies are really getting us, not with the cost of the cameras. Why does it have to be so expensive? Computer ink in general.
Because they can. Because it's no.
So if you print up a bunch of pictures, you wind up running through one of those little cassettes very quickly.
Right. Although, truly, it's becoming less and less of an issue because nobody prints them anymore. I mean, there's so many great things you can do with digital photographs, you know, on our phones, our tablets, our TV screens, our computer screens. The thing about getting an envelope back from the drugstore and handing around prints, it's done. It's gone.
For some people. Mario from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi there. Can you explain the difference in the meaning of the word resolution as it applied to film as opposed to digital? I know that with film, the smaller you made the print, the clearer and more articulated it became, but that's not the case with digital. With digital, it has something to do with matching the pixels of the camera to the pixels of the monitor or the printer. It's like a kind of a matching operation rather than just the degree of magnification.
Yeah, that's true. The all these arguments about which has more resolution, you know, film or a sensor, it's bogus because they're not equivalent. The film is not made of individual dots like a JPEG picture is. And furthermore, what you see on the screen is not the same you get when you print. You might zoom in Photoshop and look at your picture and see the individual squares that form the tiny, tiny dots of the picture. You won't see it when it's printed. They blend together.
Well, I remember it wasn't that many years ago that people were arguing over whether we should have digital movies. And now I think almost every film is shot digitally, and I defy anyone to spot the difference.
Well, movies are still being shot with film.
You're some
right.
Are.
You can't see the difference. But boy, where you see the difference, digital projection. I choose my movie theaters now based on the projection. But back to the resolution question, because it's a big issue for me. And it's one of those terms that you need to understand. It's the same word being used to describe different things: the camera resolution, monitor resolution, printer resolution. And in a way, you sort of need to get your head around that to get the right resolution for each one of those parts.
I don't know.
Sue, hi, you're on the air. Sue from Ocean Grove, New Jersey. Hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Okay.
Good. I was given the gift 3 days ago for my birthday for my husband and kids of a new camera. I've been hanging on to my old 35mm Pentax ME for years, but I have finally been convinced to go digital. And you've answered quite a few of my questions already about megapixels, things like that. But my question now is, should I just go out and buy a new Pentax body and keep those old lenses I have, a real big telephoto and a wide angle? Or should I just forget I ever owned them and buy one of these comes with a lens kind of SLRs? There's a big difference in price and so many choices. I'm a little overwhelmed.
So how many lenses do you have?
I have two. This is the sort of mount that came on with the K-mount. It's like 18 to 35, I think. And then I have a zoom lens. I just take family, snowstorms, beautiful spring days, that kind of thing. So very amateur stuff.
Well, Pentax is a minor player on the SLRs. Most people have Nikons or Canons, but they're good. I mean, they're perfectly fine. They're less expensive. And if you've got some lenses already, you may as well.
So the quality on the lenses hasn't really changed then as everything else has progressed. I'd still be served well by those old lenses, you think?
Depends on how old they are.
I'd be really careful. If you have a digital camera, the newer lenses are made for it, and they talk to the digital camera.
Right.
So a good new lens, you'll be much happier. Think into the future.
Just one more question. People are asking about the hybrid cameras that shoot both photos and movies. Do you think they're going to overtake camcorders?
That's the only kind there are now. Even the SLR is all film video now.
What are the new apps that can be used to manipulate digital images? Are any of them any good?
Well, apps are already iPhone, so I use Grungetastic, Instagram, Hipstamatic, Picture Perfect. But if you're working with your picture still on the desktop, I would seriously take a look at Adobe Lightroom.
And you said people can email you?
Yes.
Where?
kiceman@sva.edu.
And Catherine Iceman is the director of the Masters in Digital Photography program at the School of Visual Arts, author with Sean Duggan and Tim Gray of Digital Photography, a book that explains it all. And David Pogue writes one of those wonderful articles at the New York Times, Technology on technology. I want to thank both of you so much for being on our show today.
I welcome your questions to pogue@nytimes.com. And my book is Digital Photography, The Missing Manual.